Yeah, so I'm going to begin by giving you an overview of what we're going to talk about, and which is around work that Gráinne Conáil in her keynote this morning alluded to. That's work within the Open University's Learning Design Initiative, which comprises two different strands. One is an institutionally funded strand, which has been going for about 2 years now, which is focusing on embedding learning design methodology in the Open University's own course production process. And the second strand is funded by GISC, and this is looking at extending and evaluating that methodology both within the OU's processes and across a couple of other universities' processes, so University of Reading, Brunel, and a couple of others. So the particular side of things that Simon and I are going to focus on this morning is the idea of visualization, of visual representation, and how that can be useful in the as practitioners, students, and other people make use of the learning resources and learning designs that encompass them. So, over the past couple of years, we've developed a visual representation, which you see an early version of here. This is built using a tool called Compendium LD, which was built on another tool developed within the Open University. And we've taken this tool and added some particular functions to allow it to be used to design learning activities. And over the past couple of years, we've gone on to embed these functionalities within the tool. And what I want to do now is to pass over to Simon to talk about some of the evidence that has been gathered about practitioners' use of visual representations within the course production process. So he's going to spend quite a few minutes talking about that, and he'll give a bit more of a background to the actual underlying concepts used within these particular visual representations. And then to finish off, I'm going to come back and talk about recent work we've been doing about raising the about introducing visual representations at the curriculum and higher levels. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. You're getting your money's worth this afternoon. You're getting two of us for the price of one. As Andrew says, what I'm first of all going to talk about a little bit is how we came around to develop one form of visualization that we're currently using. We picked up Compendium, as Andrew says, 2 years ago. And one of the key things that we were interested from the outset was working out ways in which it could help us. We could use Compendium to form visualizations of educational, of learning activities. And I use that term fairly generally to refer mainly to a unit or a series of weeks' worth of learning, but of course you can go down to the very micro level. So what we actually started at 18 months or so ago was taking the learning sequence and putting that at the core of the visualization, not indifferent to what LAMS does in terms of spelling out a series of activities that the student does, be those offline or online. This foregrounds the student's experience. It also allows you to vary the scale and size of the activities you're choosing to represent. Whilst it certainly shows an activity sequence, it's not really showing the full educational activity structure. Unlike the work which has been done in Australia, we too picked up on two further dimensions. First of all, the teacher activity, so what could also be called the support that the teacher provides, and also the resources which are being used, which we would consider both as being the media, the objects, but also other people who might be involved in the activity. So As you can see, and I do apologise for not going through the individual detail of this structure, but it's more talking about the structure of the diagram as a whole. What you can see is that you can begin to start forming associations between the elements or the components of the learning design, allowing very quick reading of the design and appreciation of where the components fit in with each other. The question that I think we've been thinking about, certainly over the last 6 months, is what more can or do we need to see about the structure, the orchestration, and the composition of this design? Now, one thing which was a logical step was to prise the design apart a little bit and to insert a fourth dimension, which was about student output. Now, most people would understand this predominantly to be about assessment, but I think certainly coming from working within the Open University, there's also a whole series of other forms of evaluation that researchers, that managers, tutors and students might want to actually undertake on this output. So it's a matter of having somewhere to actually record all the forms of output that might be necessary and to understand how they fitted in with a student's activity. Also, on the left-hand side of the these two dimensions here. Not only was it important to recognise what the teacher was potentially going to be doing whilst the students were learning, but I think there also needs to be recognition that the design is actually locked in, pedagogy rather, is really locked into the design. And adding teacher intent to the second dimension was really a matter of trying to find somewhere in which to make explicit the learning theory, the empirical models, the patterns, the experiences, the sources that a teacher or designer is drawing upon from which to justify why they are putting this sequence together as they are. Now, this might be that it's the designer who's marking these up, or it could be that what you actually have is you have a lecturer putting together one of these designs and a learning designer coming in later and actually identifying and spotting the elements of the design and giving them a more formal language. On the far left, we have a dimensional column which is titled What is to be Learnt? Again, purposely not titled Learning Outcomes, because this is really, again, thinking about not just the formal expressions of learning goals or learning outcomes that we might set students, but also drawing from some of our work, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a minute, giving a place for those more informal more specific items that teachers bring when they're thinking about learning, you know, the actual real stuff, rather than sort of the slightly more abstract or summarised learning goals. And sixthly, certainly within the OU context, we have a very sophisticated structure for developing and building the media which students use. And one thing which came out was the need to really unpack a little bit what some of these resources might begin to look like. And it's only sometimes when you get down to the level of the components or sometimes the conditions that you might put on the resources do you really understand how the learning activity is formed. So I think what this generally leads us on to is a series of headings which we've converted into, an earlier version of this we converted into a template which is now in available on Compendium LD. And the reason why we chose a template, if we can call it that, was the fact that we had feedback that that designers and lecturers were really quite uncomfortable starting with a blank screen. So it was a way of trying to give them some sort of structure that had some sort of common visualisation patterns that were sort of independent of tools or particular approaches. And one thing that we're looking at the moment, again, this is why using Compendium to create these visualisations could be quite useful, although obviously the visualisation itself could be constructed on any tool, is the fact that we can actually begin to sort of start adding value, adding information behind the scenes, if you like. And one thing which I occasionally get involved with is actually beginning to sort of do development testing or other evaluation on courses. So the ability to be able to record comments behind icons that a designer can then come back to and look at later on is a quite useful way of actually sort of communicating information without having to write it down in a Word file. So very briefly, that's just moving on from sort of how we've developed one form of visualisation that we're interested in. I'm going to say a little bit about some of the evidence we've been gathering over the last year. We do certainly recognise that it's very important to understand what the users require and what they're expecting. Also in terms of helping us try to be able to take these tools and these methods and techniques to staff. So we've undertaken a series of workshops and trials questionnaires with various groups. As you can see on the right-hand side, we've undertaken some workshops and we have impact surveys planned for those for the summer. And we've also been undertaking evidence gathering in respect to the sharing designs and the CloudWorks website. It's worth saying that this work really started about 2 years ago with a series of semi-structured interviews, which we are again returning to now. So building from the evidence base, here's a few tentative findings. We have plans for the next few months of actually taking this out and trying to get slightly larger samples. But one of the questions that we have in our questionnaire is actually asking about visualization, not just about the visualizations that we're creating, but visualization in general. And I just wanted to share a few of these with you, just because I think that these really sort of do underline the fact that there is interest and support for continuing this work in visualization, both at the sort of the unit and the activity levels, but also at the higher levels. So, for example, we had 81%, which is out of 31 people, responding that there are aspects of their work that they would find beneficial in using visual representations and techniques for. There's also an interest to improve their knowledge and understanding of visual representation. And quite interestingly, at the bottom there, again, only of 11, so it'll be interesting to see how these trends continue with further work. But only one person considered visualization to be a specialist task, which is a little bit different to what I was saying, signing up at LAMS a year ago and recording. So clearly maybe there's a beginning to be a change in perception. And of course, most people sort of saying that visualization could really help in conversations between course authors. Just picking up on some of those in a little bit more detail and broadening the net, if you like, for taking on board comments from other workshops. I've tried to outline 10 benefits to teaching and learning for visualization, and particularly in terms of the activity level, which I was talking about earlier. The first is that it can form a description that makes the structure and relationships explicit. And these are all real quotes. So it shows relationship sequences better. Someone else comments, it helps to clarify things. Someone else, simplification and clarification, potentially complex problems. And other people touch upon the new challenge that I think we'll be going to be increasingly facing about online teaching and trying to understand how things fit together online. Second one, about organising and disciplining thoughts and practice. Again, important. And although it actually might help people organise their thoughts, there's still a recognition there that it can support creativity and design. The third comment, which comes through quite often, is the ability to reflect on a design and to see things from the student's point of view, which I think is very important. So even though a particular visualisation might not be runnable on a computer, it's still possible for someone to actually step through and understand from the student's perspective. Collaboration and communication of ideas, again, is an important thing which continually gets mentioned to us. And the final six, several comments we've had about testing the realisability and the practicality of design, especially when you're having to commit other resources or other people to the development of the resource of developing the learning. The use of visualisation as a diagnostic tool for the evaluation and the annotation of diagrams. For the supporting the delivery of change in practice, so in terms of sort of changes of practice of design and also approaches to teaching, to capturing the design process in addition to the final output. This is quite interesting because it's not only about what is finally created, which can then potentially be shared with other designers, but it's also about maybe capturing some of those decisions as the design evolves and emerges, which is very important. And the final two, sharing the visual design or learning plan with students, which has been mentioned this morning, and also the supporting of the teaching of the course. So whilst there are many benefits, of course, there are also barriers which we're picking up. The first two, I think, are becoming a little less important. Design as a specialism, I think, you know, that's maybe slightly more complicated than when we maybe first thought. The second one was what often seems to be first mentioned by people, which is a preference for non-visual methods. People often say, I don't really think visually. I don't have the data here, but there is. I think again, this is quite a complex area, and I think although people maybe don't feel that they naturally think that way, there's still a lot of interest in thinking visually when people can see real value in doing so. The final three really adds additional time to the design process. Learning activities are too complex to visualise, and technical issues. I'm happy to talk about a little bit more about those in the conclusion. But I'll now pass over back over to Andrew to now begin to sort of broaden things out. So moving beyond what we've been we've been developing for some time, which is the unit and the activity level representations, and thinking a bit more about the curriculum.
So, as Simon says, I'm now going to share with you some of the initial work we've been doing at what I call higher levels than the activity level we've focused on so far. So this is described as the curriculum level, where it's typically composed of many, many learning activities involving usually many, many course modules. And the kinds of questions we're interested in are: what use is visual representation? Can it improve the design process? And very importantly, can visual representation help to improve the end product? So over the next couple of slides, I'm going to show you a couple of prototype visualizations that we've developed and that have undergone very little testing so far. So this one here is a prototype visualization for a learner view of learning outcomes. And here we've got the learning outcomes are these sort of orange blobs. And these blue blobs are the courses within a foundation degree in business studies. So just a few of the courses. And this is also a blue blob. It's got a red circle on it. And the red circle indicates that that particular course is mandatory to achieve the foundation degree. And those without the red circle are optional. Secondly, the diameter of the blob indicates the number of points that the course module represents. So these two are 30 point modules, and this is a 60 point module. So the larger the point number, obviously, the more effort the student is going to have to put in to achieve to pass the course. So this is just a prototype view intended for learners. Secondly, I'll return to something that Gráinne Canals showed in her keynote earlier this morning, and this is the pedagogy profile, where the types of tasks that a learner is expected to undertake are broken down on a block by block basis. So here are the kinds of tasks there. Expected to carry out in particular blocks. So the amount of time they're expected to spend on assimilative tasks in block one is here, on information handling tasks in block one is here. So this gives a kind of a snapshot of the way that the learners expected to spend their time. So if this data existed, then we can produce things like this, which are a more visual representation of the way that the time varies, the time spent on different tasks varies. But I must stress here, that's if the data exists. So there's an issue about where the data comes from. Thanks, James. Final thing I want to mention a little is some initial work we've done on use of patterns. So patterns are kind of abstract descriptions of good ways of approaching teaching and learning. And so this is a visual representation of what's called the jigsaw pattern, which is a way of getting learners to interact collaboratively and discuss issues related to the problem and work their way through, initially as individuals and then as groups towards learning outcomes. And we've built up a couple of representations of these in Compendium LD, such that when the user hovers over one of these icons with the mouse, so hovers over here, then they get to see a larger visual representation. And if they double-click that, then they can see an instantiation of that pattern, which they can then cut and copy into their particular learning design. So this is kind of moving away from the unit level in a different direction towards a pattern-based approach. Okay, so now we'll round up with some conclusions. The evidence that Simon's presented indicates that there is support for visual representation. The specific representations that we've used have thrown up some barriers and some useful applications, and we've got a need to go further in the kind of data capture methods we've got to really tie down particularly what is useful about the representations at the activity level, instead of this. At the moment, we've got a more broad brushstroke set of evidence about visual representations in general, rather than the particular ones that we've been honing. Finally, we need to work on those aspects at the curriculum level, and we'll be taking the kinds of prototype curriculum level representations out for more evaluation with users in over the next few months. Okay, so I think that's about it. Yeah, and thank you. Obviously, if you've got time for questions.
Yeah, yeah. Perhaps if you can come up in a second, set up, and if there's maybe a quick question.
I know I've asked you this question before, Andrew, but I asked it privately. I'm going to ask it publicly.
Okay.
I can see how course developers and course designers in the OU model would find that incredibly useful. How would I, as an individual academic member of staff working in a relatively traditional university, working with my own learning content in a relatively isolated way, find that helpful? Would I? You've talked about the partners that you're working with. Are any of them what I would regard as traditional?
Yes. They're universities of Reading, Brunel,
Cambridge, and South Bank.
So, and they've got the usual mix of face-to-face and blended approaches. Alongside this work, we're looking at ways of sharing both the designs and comments on the designs. So that's may answer one aspect of your question. That at the moment, from the tools we've developed, if you wanted comment on them, you could export them as HTML and an image and post them up somewhere and invite peers to comment. Okay, so there's that. We're looking at ways of making that much easier and building commenting facilities around the designs. But that doesn't really get to the nub of your question about the motivation, because someone's got to want to do that in the first place. And I'm afraid, no, I don't have an easy answer for that.
I think there's also the differentiation to be made between the unit, the activity level work, and the curriculum level. And I'm not sure which your question was more...
Well, in a sense, I can totally see the curriculum design possibilities. It was more whether or not, when you got down to quite a practical level of an individual delivering learning in their classroom, in inverted commas, they could use this, whether you were looking to try and get it at that level or whether you were only working at the kind of curriculum design level.
Sorry, just coming into the visualisation, which I talked about at the beginning, very much so. I mean, I've used that for workshops. I've used that in teaching settings. So I think it is still a very useful way, even if you're undertaking purely face-to-face work, to actually help you understand what you're doing. And also in terms of sort of critical reflection, either for yourself or allowing you to keep a record of what you're doing. And I've actually also taken those representations and given them out as handouts at the beginning of a workshop as well, to sort of help people understand what I'm trying to achieve, what resources they'll be receiving in the morning to achieve those, as well as sort of the activities which they might be undertaking during that. In terms of the curriculum level...
Well, it's early work, but the stuff aimed at learners, which is obviously in the public domain and shared by learners in a cohort, the other stuff is... For instance, the pedagogic profile is really initiated by the fact that the OU works in this course team, large course team methodology, to help the members of the team understand when all the stuff that they're working on, well, not just course teams but curriculum teams, as all their stuff is being worked through, to give an impression of what it might look like at the end, by making them think about how much of the tasks are assimilative, how much are information generation, that sort of thing. That if they can provide that information, then a snapshot can be given, or a quick representation can be given of what the overall modules might look like at the end.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're probably running a little bit short of time. So if anyone has any further questions, please do come and approach Andrew or myself afterwards. Thank you.
Now it gives me great pleasure to welcome Di Griffiths to share with us his thoughts, particularly on services. So,